My name is Brad. I'm the young adult pastor here at Westridge, and I'm so glad you guys are here. This is our big group launch night, and so our focus is helping anyone and everyone find connections and community and people. We are made to know each other. We're made to walk through life with people, and so we as a church want to collectively try to help everybody who walks through our doors. Number one, connect with Jesus and have a relationship with God, but number two, connect with the people that God made for us to be connected with as well, because we're meant to help each other, and I hope that where we're going to go tonight, the things we're going to talk through are an aid and a help in that and an encouragement in that, because again, it's really core and central to so much of what God is continuing to teach us and grow us in and hoping that we will grab a hold of as his kids and as the people that he loves like crazy, for us to realize not only who he is, but also how we can connect with one another to know him better. So is it cool if we're just honest with each other and transparent? And like, fake church is not really church. So let's not have fake church tonight. Let's have real church tonight. So I'm going to share a little bit of a dad fail that I had recently. I've got three sons, and they're 9, 7, and 5. They're finally all at the same school this year, praise God. So we don't have to like go to multiple schools and do multiple drop-offs and pickups and all that stuff. We're done with all that. Everybody's at the same school for at least 2 more years. So we're excited about that. But last year was, we all know, last year was weird. It was crazy. Lots of weird stuff. Everything was different. Nothing was the way anyone thought the year would go. And so, in general, it was easy to be stressed. It was easy to be anxious. It was easy to not always be the best version of you. Or at least that was me. Was anyone else that way last year? There was just moments where you weren't necessarily yourself. And so me and my oldest son, and I'm learning more and more the older he gets, that he is not me. Like when you have kids, or at least when I had kids, I assumed all of my kids would be very similar to me because they're my kids, right? And especially since they're sons, they're like, okay, I'm a guy, they're a guy. I've raised them. I've known them since they were born. We have similar DNA here. Like, I would assume they're going to be wired up similar to me. We'll understand each other. We'll communicate the same way. We'll have similar personalities. We'll laugh at the same jokes. Like, that's how it's probably going to be. And I'm discovering that is not true at all. Like, my son doesn't communicate the same way I do at all. He doesn't respond to things the same way I do at all. He is very, like, tense all the time. And I am not that way. And he's very, like, needs to be in control of everything all the time and, like, knows what the schedule is all the time. And, like, there's all these things about him that I'm learning and I appreciate about him, but they're just so different than what I anticipated, what I thought, and different than me. And so when we communicate sometimes, we don't always see each other, you know, like eye to eye. We're not really here all the time. And I don't know if you have people in your life that are like that you love, but you don't always see eye to eye on things. And sometimes tensions can rise. It can get stressful. And so we were having one of those mornings getting ready for school last year. And me and Cooper are just like not understanding each other. He is continuing to do things that are frustrating me. Like, Cooper, go get your shoes on, buddy. And he's off like messing with the dog and he's messing with his hair. He is like so into his hair. Don't tell him I'm telling you about this. But if I just go up and hug him and like my shoulder accidentally bumps his hair and moves it out of place, he's like immediately like, like immediately like fixes his hair. He is so like particular about things. And so he was messing with his hair that morning. He was doing all the things other than the things I was asking him to do, right? Like, get your shoes on, get your backpack, let's get in the car. And my wife is out of town, okay? So that heightens the whole thing. Because I'm doing this like I'm single dadding it, okay? And usually me and her both take care of things together. So if I'm having, like, I woke up and I'm not like with it too much yet, she can help fill in the gap there and vice versa. She's not there. So it's all me. I'm asking him to do the things he needs to do. He's the oldest. And so I'm kind of expecting him, and anyone in the room who's the oldest kind of gets this, right? You're just expected to do more as the oldest. And I was the oldest, so I get it. Like, that's what I was expecting of him. Like, I need you to set the example for your younger brothers, do the things I'm asking you to do, because I am alone and I'm trying to get you to school, okay? So do this and we'll be good. Doesn't do it. Like, he continues to not do it and is driving me insane. Like, I'm going mad. And I'm raising my voice. I just raise my voice. And I'm like, get your shoes on. For the love of all things holy, go get your shoes on, get your backpack, and get in the car. It's the same phrase I've said 15 times in a row, and you still haven't done it. And so we're just continuing, like, to go back and forth. He eventually does it after I've raised my voice a few more levels and repeated it a few more times. And I'm like, my stress level's now like, whoo, like it's bumping the roof now at this point. Like, it can't go much higher. And I'm just like driving like this, like, just, we got to get him to school. We got to get, this part of the day needs to be done. And so I'm going through the line, and usually we like to unbuckle, give hugs, have a good day, you know, all that. And it's still going, not the way I'm hoping. Like, all right, guys, let's get unbuckled. Let's get our backpacks on. And they're arguing about something. Like, no one's doing anything I just said. All right, guys, maybe you didn't hear me. Hey, let's unbuckle. Let's get our stuff together. Let's get out of the car. Nothing. Like, no one's doing anything. So then I'm just, like, losing it, right? I'm in the line. I'm letting go of the wheel. I'm looking behind me. If you guys don't do the things I'm saying, like, I'm just starting to throw out things that's going to happen. Like, you're going to lose this, and this is going to happen. And I'm freaking out. And finally, they get all together right as they're about to need to get out of the car. And Cooper's trying to tell me something. I'm like, get out. You have to go to school now. Like, this has not been a good morning. But I love you. Goodbye. Like, I'm trying to be a good dad, but at the same time, I know I'm not being a very good dad in this moment. Like, I'm still yelling. I'm still stressed. I'm like, just go. Just go. And they finally get out, and I'm driving home and, like, decompressing just a little bit. And so before I tell you the last part of the story, you need to know what had happened the night before. And the night before, my son was telling me about, it's called Breakfast of Champions that they do at their school. It's at Russom Elementary. This is like a thing, okay? If you get Breakfast of Champions, it means you were like the student of the month kind of a thing, right? You did awesome at things. Your teacher acknowledges it, and you are highlighted out of your whole class. And so Cooper was just like, man, I don't know if I'm going to get start like this award. I don't know if I'm going to get to be the Breakfast of Champions. I don't know if I'm going to get to go. Like, he's stressed about it. He's worried about it. And I'm like, yeah, man, well, don't worry about it. Like, you've just do your best. Like, do the things you know you're supposed to do and try your best and all those things. So I'm just telling him these things, trying to help him calm down and not stress about it too much. But he was really, like, concerned about this thing. So then fast forward to me driving home after this terrible morning, and I'm just still gripping the wheel, like, white knuckles. I'm just, those kids. Particularly the oldest. Like, I'm angry. Like, I'm angry at my kids. And I get home, and I pour my coffee, and I sit down on the couch, and I'm petting the dog, still trying to, like, calm down. And I get a text from my mother-in-law, and it's this big picture of Cooper smiling with a medal, and it says, Breakfast of Champions. And it was the day that he found out. And he had no idea. Like, the night before, he had no idea he was going to be Breakfast of Champions. I had no idea. It's meant to be a surprise. And so I look at this picture, and I immediately start bawling. Like, I just start losing it. Because I'm like, oh my gosh. Like, my kid was trying to tell me he's concerned about this thing. He's worried about this thing. And I'm not really hearing him because I'm still, like, April's out of town the night before, so I'm still trying to get them in bed and do all the things, like, get your teeth brushed, make sure that they don't, you know, they're not the smelly kid in class. Like, I'm trying to do all those things and take care of them, get them in bed on time, all that stuff. And so I'm concerned with all these other things and them doing the things that I need them to do so we can get to the next thing that needs to be done, and freaking out, stressing out, and getting everybody, like, in not the best place before they go to school. And then I get home, and I see my son, like, smiling ear to ear because this thing that was really important to him happened that I set him up for. Like, I sent him into school. I'm sure he was mad at me. We were both, like, mad at each other. And he went into school, like, mad, and then found out this thing happened. And I just felt terrible. Like, I could have sent him into the day, like, so much better than the way I did. And he could have maybe enjoyed this so much more. And I could have been more happy for him instead of feeling like, man, I'm a terrible dad because I didn't even hear him about this thing. And now it happened for him. And now it's just like, it whether it was a big deal to him or not, it was a big deal to me, you know, because I knew I had not done the things that I was supposed to do as a dad. And so I felt I had let him down. I felt like I had let God down. I felt like I let myself down, let my wife down. And again, this was just all going on in me. Like, I knew how mad I was. I knew how stressed I was. I knew how frustrated I was. And I just found myself on the couch like, what am I doing? Have you ever had those moments where you're just like, what am I doing? Like, where has my focus been? Where is my focus now? Like, what have I been living for? Like, I'm literally in that place, which seems like not a big deal. When I look back at it, it's like, okay, yeah, your wife was out of town. You're getting the kids ready. A stressful time. Makes sense. And then you didn't have a great morning. Okay, we move on. Yes, we do. But that wasn't a normal thing. And God uses moments like that in our life. And for me, that was just, I just felt like terrible. I felt like crap that morning. I didn't feel like much of a good anything. And it caused me to ask that question. And there's been lots of moments in my life where I've asked that question of what am I doing? What am I doing? It's kind of a big, broad question of what am I doing with my life? What am I doing right now specifically in my life? What am I doing in this particular instance that's led me to this moment where I'm asking that question? But we all, I think, can relate to that. We all can relate to those moments where we're just stuck shaking our head, asking, what am I doing? What is going on? Where am I at? Who am I? I mean, these are the questions that we get to when we feel like we failed, we've messed up, and we have just kind of hit bottom in a lot of ways. And so at the core of that question is really, and this was for me, and I think this is pretty similar for a lot of us, it's when the focus for our life is on us. Like, I look even at that failed dad moment for me. It's like, why was I so stressed and why was I so angry and why was I so upset? And why was I so wound up in that whole thing? Well, because I was focused on me getting stuff done, me making sure everything was going according to the way it normally goes when me and my wife were both doing it all and making sure everyone was doing the things they needed to do. The focus was me. And that's when things went off the rails. And I look back at all the other moments when it's been like, what are you doing? And it's a consistent theme for me. I'm the problem when I'm asking that question. Like, what am I doing? It's even in the question, right? Me. And so that's where we're going to start tonight, is us. Is our focus on us? What happens when our focus is on us? What happens when we are asking the question, what am I doing? Because it happens to all of us, and it happens in all of our lives. And some of us maybe are in a moment like that now. Maybe we've come out of a moment recently like that. Maybe we're about to head into one, but they are universal for us. And not just for us now, they've been universal for us for ever since humans have been a thing. I mean, you trace this back all the way back to Genesis 3, right? God's made everything and everything is good, and he's set up this amazing place called Earth and put Adam and Eve in this amazing place called Eden, and he's given them this one simple thing to not do, this one simple boundary, and everything else is to be enjoyed. And the moment Adam and Eve put their focus on them, and there was some help that got them to focus on themselves in the form of a snake, but it still was about where their focus was. Where was it? It was on them. And in that moment, they made the first mistake of all of our mistakes that we inherited all the way down the line. And it's interesting because in that first mistake, you see a lot of things come up in them that come up in us when we mess up, when we're all kind of self-focused. And here's just kind of some of the big things that we'll see. We are super easily angered when things are all about us and we're focused on us. We can become really insecure about a lot of things when everything's about us and we're focused on us. And some kind of other things that are going on there is just the scope of our vision in general in life when we're focused on us is very limited. Like, you only see so much of what's going on in life when you're focused on you. When I'm just looking at me, I don't know what's going on in your life. I don't know what's going on in my son's life, who's really concerned about being the breakfast of champions. But I'm not concerned with that because I'm focused on me. So our scope and our perspective is super narrow. It's really specific. It's not broad at all. And it's not about anybody other than us. And all this is going to give birth to sin. And again, it's not just with Adam and Eve. It gave birth to the first sin there, but it continues to give birth to sin. I mean, think about, and we don't need to say these out loud right now, but the moments in which you know you just screwed up the worst. You did the things you know God has not called you to. You know the things that you've done that were either harmful for you or for somebody else that go directly against the things God has made you for. You think about when those moments have happened in your life and think about who was the center of all of that. Who was the focus of all of that? Who was the one who you cared about the most in those moments? I guarantee you it wasn't Jesus. And most likely it was you. Because when we are the focus and we are the point and we are the purpose, then it will always lead to sin eventually. At some point. Because we weren't made for that. But that's usually when the worst of us comes out, is when we're just focused on us. Now, the Old Testament had a solution for this, and God set all this up to help us out because he saw us just continuing to go off the rails. We continue to be by ourselves. We continue to be selfish. We continue to do the things that only look out for us. And so he came up with this system of sacrifice and laws and boundaries and discipline to try to help us stay the course and really experience him and really experience life. And it worked temporarily in moments. But it was never anything that lasted. And there was a couple reasons for that. One is those things weren't really meant to last forever because they really couldn't just by their nature. But the other reason is because we kept messing up. The people of Israel continued to mess up. They continued to make the focus themselves. They continued to do something that was not what God called them to do because their focus continued to get off, continued to get narrow again. It continued to zone in on them. And so ultimately, that solution needed an upgrade, and that happened in the New Testament when Jesus comes along. And then Jesus is the solution. He's the solution through his sacrifice, which is permanent, which is enough to cover anything and everything for everyone. And this is why we can read 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 21 that says, God had made him who knew no sin to be sin for us. This is Jesus. So that in him we might become the righteousness of God. Jesus comes as a solution for our selfishness, our sin, our focus that isn't on God. He comes to reconnect, to reestablish, to reconcile, to make it right again, so that we can stop the madness of continuing to just live for us. And so he gives us the example of just how he lives his life. Like, you follow the life of Jesus, and you look through the Gospels, and you read about these stories, and I mean, it's incredible the way he lives his life. In fact, it's perfect the way he lives his life. And I think the reason we all read stories of Jesus and we're so inspired and we're so encouraged and we're so like fired up from it, when we actually take the time to read it and look at it is because it is so counterintuitive to the way we all have gotten accustomed to living and the way we're shown to live in so many different ways. In the ways that we oftentimes find ourselves when we're asking, what am I doing? Jesus never had to ask, what am I doing? We never read any moments of him like on the couch crying, because he never had that kind of a moment, at least not for the reasons that I was crying on the couch. I mean, he has a moment right before he goes to the cross where he is in a super intense moment, crying out to God, making sure this is the thing that he's actually supposed to be doing, knowing it is. But we don't see him having any of these moments of selfishness the way we do. And so we see his life as an example, but then we also take this big challenge that he lays out. And it makes sense with just kind of the theme of this focus that we can get off so easily on. And so you take all of the commandments that are in Scripture, and somebody's asking him, hey, Jesus, out of all these commandments that we see in Scripture, all these commandments that God's laid out for us, what's the greatest of all of them? And so Jesus lays out the fairly famous great commandment. Mark 12, verses 30 and 31, love the Lord your God with all of your heart, mind, soul, and strength. And the second is to love your neighbor as yourself. This is what he's saying is the most important thing for you to live your life for are these things. This is the most important commandments in all of Scripture is these right here. You can boil it down to this. Well, even looking at that, right? I mean, it's like Jesus is saying, have your focus on number one is God. Put your focus on God. Okay, well, I mean, just right there, you've broadened the spectrum from your focus on you and zoomed that thing infinity out, right? To God now. Okay, so have your focus be on God. Okay, got it. Next. Oh yeah, and everyone else. The very last person he mentions in the Great Commandment is who? You. It's me. Love the Lord your God. Love others as much as you love yourself. We're mentioned last. I think there's something to that, you know? We're not meant to be focused, self-focused all the time. We're not meant to be constantly scrolling our social media feed to see how many likes we have, if we got any new followers, if we're wittier than the other people that we follow, if our photos look better. We're not meant to be self-obsessed. We're meant to be focused on God and other people, then we're in the back of the line. And it doesn't mean we don't love ourselves. We are mentioned as far as loving ourselves in the way in which God is asking us to love ourselves and understand how to love ourselves. But that doesn't mean we're self-focused and self-absorbed and self-motivated by things that are going to affect and help and benefit us. And so in this challenge and in his example, he's constantly pushing us and pointing us to a focus that's not ourselves, but that is much, much bigger, much, much grander, much, much more important than just us. But here's the other thing that Jesus' solution of himself does for us. It not only gives us the example, he not only gives us the challenge, but in restoring that relationship, in sacrificing himself for us, making himself sin, when he himself did not sin, but he took on our sin for us. When he did this, he restored our relationship back to God the way it was intended to be back when God made Adam and Eve all the way back in Genesis. Before people started focusing on themselves and living for themselves, Jesus comes in to restore that which was intended in the first place. And so he comes in to restore this relationship and our identity in him. So we get to know our Father again, and we get to be his kids again. This is why 2 Corinthians 6:18 says, I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters, says the Lord Almighty. God is our Father. He's our Creator. He knit us together in our mother's womb. He knows every hair on our head. God is the one that we are meant to be living our life for and be connected to and be understanding everything in the context of from him, from our Father. It reminds me of, again, like being a dad, I feel the responsibility of trying to help my sons understand the world and what's going on around them, things they're thinking and feeling when they have questions. Like I feel, as their dad, the responsibility to help them work through some of that stuff, help them figure it out, give them some answers to things, ask them some other questions to help them think of it differently. And this is a little bit of the kind of relationship we're meant to have with our Father, who is our collective Father. Like he made all of us. We're meant to look to him for answers, and he's offering them. He is able to inform us and give us anything and everything we would need to actually experience life and experience it the way it was actually intended to be lived. And so when we have this restored relationship, we accept this invitation back into the family of God to be a son and a daughter, to know our Father again, to have our focus redirected off of us and on to him, and to have our vision expanded. This is walking in the way of Jesus. When Jesus says, I'm the way, the truth, and the life, no one can come to the Father except through me, this is part of the way in which we're meant to do it. To have our focus now on him, the way Jesus did, the way Jesus lived, and we're meant to be having our focus on him now. We're meant to be living for him now. We're not meant to be focused and living for us. We're not meant to be all about our name, making it great. We're meant to be about his. And so when we walk in the way of Jesus, it shows us the bigger picture. We don't keep this narrow focus, this just like zoned in on this one little life that is us. This one little set of problems, this one little set of good things, this one little set of opportunities. It's not just that one little thing. When we focus on God, we get zoomed out to where we can see all of these other things. We start to see everything differently because we're seeing the bigger picture. And it reminds us more of who we really are. Because when we're just focused on us, we can trick ourselves into thinking we're a bigger deal than we are, right? It's like when you get a magnifying glass and you take it and you put it on an ant. The ant looks huge. You take the magnifying glass off and you realize, oh no, the ant's an ant. It's tiny. But when we focus our lives on ourselves, it's the same effect. Like we are like, oh yeah, look at how big a deal we are. Because we got the magnifying glass on us. It's like, hey, what up? Look at me. I'm kind of a big deal. And everybody else is looking at you like, no, you're not. Because their magnifying glass isn't on you. You know what I mean? Have you ever been around a big group of people that are all like this, by the way? Like where everybody's magnifying glass is on themselves? It's kind of ridiculous. Everyone's talking about themselves and no one cares about each other. I think it's called just life. That's kind of the way a lot of it is. And so when you actually take that magnifying glass off of you get perspective on how big you actually are, how big of a deal you actually are, how big of a deal I actually am. Turns out it's not that big of a deal. And so living for Jesus in the way of Jesus and taking on the challenge of Jesus helps us get that magnifying glass on the one who's deserving of it, who is God. But what's funny about that is God doesn't need a magnifying glass. He's bigger than the magnifying glass. Like he's already big enough. He doesn't need our focus to make him bigger. And so it's really just being able to accept and see reality when we do this. When we come to know Jesus and start to follow him, reality actually becomes a thing for us. We actually get to see things for what they really are. We get to see us for who we really are. We get to see other people for who they really are. And more importantly than anything, we get to see God for who he really is. And so Ephesians 5, 1 through 2 says this. It says, follow God's example, therefore, as dearly loved children, and walk in the way of love. Just as Christ loved us and gave himself for us as a fragrant offering and sacrifice to God. So this idea of following in the way of Jesus and getting our focus off of us and getting our eyes on God is, it's not just about perspective, and it's not just about not making yourself a big deal. It's also being able to understand that, yes, you're not a big deal, but you are dearly loved. You're a dearly loved child of God. If that wasn't true, he wouldn't have sent Jesus. He wouldn't have given up his son and make him go through all of this on earth, just living on earth instead of in heaven. And then on top of that, going through the torture and the eventual death that he went through. All of that shows and proves his love for us. So though you're not a big deal, you are loved a big deal. And that's terrible English. So let's say it better. You're loved a great deal. You're loved a massive amount, even though you're not a big deal. Because he is, he loves you way more than you deserve. He loves me way more than I deserve. And that love is what can help us keep this perspective. It's his love that can help us keep the focus on him. It's that love that can help us to see each other the way he sees us. It's that love that can help us see ourselves the way he sees us. So accepting Jesus brings us into this family that we're destined for, reuniting us back to our Father. It makes us who we were meant to be. By keeping us from focusing on ourselves, it helps us see that we are connected, and more importantly, we're family. I think we lose that a lot of times. Just in society, in the world, like, it's so easy to get self-focused and, you know, what's going on in your life, and then we stop seeing each other. But when we really are following Jesus and trying to love people the way Jesus loves people, we start to see people the way Jesus sees people, and we start to care about people the way Jesus cares about people, and we actually start to have conversations that mean something. They're not just the shallow, like, hey, how you doing? Okay, cool, good. All right, talk to you tomorrow. And like, there's no depth to any of that. Like, it goes deeper because you're not just seeing each other as people, you're seeing each other as brothers and sisters. Because that's what we are. And everybody on the planet is loved by God that much. And so when we come to know Jesus and we come to be back in the family, we're adopted back in as sons and daughters, like, okay, we are who we were meant to be. We now are in the identity that God made us for again. We now are seeing reality for what it is. We're not a big deal. He is the deal. Like, we're starting to see all that. We're getting everything in perspective now. And now we can start to see each other for who we are, which is a brother and sister. We're connected. The problem is not everybody realizes that they're a part of the family. They haven't accepted the gift to be adopted yet. God's already done all the paperwork. It's all filled out and submitted, but not everybody's approved it. And so some of us realize we're family, and then others of us don't realize we're family, but the ones that do have got to treat each other like that. Especially with the other people that already know that, that are a part of the family. They're at the family reunions, right? They come to the weddings. Like, we all see each other. If we can't get on the same page and love each other and see each other for who we actually are, how are we going to do that for the people that don't realize they've been adopted in yet? And so God's love is the thing that helps us all do that. It helps us see each other that way. And one of the beautiful things about all of that is that we are so different And we do have a bunch of different problems, and we do have a bunch of different goals, and we do have a bunch of different personalities, a bunch of different quirks, and a bunch of different shortfalls and things that are like annoying about us. We have all those things. A lot of us have a lot of different family backgrounds. A lot of us have different skin colors, and we have different holidays that we celebrate. And we have different we all have these different things about us, and all of those things are things that help us with our perspective, and they show us even more of who God is because of those things. Because if I'm just focused on me, I have this super narrow view of who God is based off of all the life experiences I've had and the ways I've experienced God's love. But then when I open myself up and I'm like, Jeremy, how has that happened for you? And then he tells me the ways he's experienced God's love. I'm like, oh, that's different than me. They're both God's love. So now I just got double the picture of how big God's love is. And that's just two people. You keep broadening that out, right? You keep having more conversations with people. You start accepting the fact that we're all family here and we all have the same Father and we're all seeing him, but we're all seeing him from a little bit different angle, a little bit different place. And it helps broaden and expand and help us see even more of who he is. And this is what we see Jesus doing, right? You see him interacting with all these different kinds of people that he typically wouldn't be interacting with. He's a Jewish rabbi. There's rules about who you interact with when you're a Jewish rabbi. You don't talk to certain people. You don't interact with them. You don't share a meal with them. You don't go to get water with them. Like, you don't do things with certain people. There are rules about that kind of thing. But none of that was observed by Jesus. He went around all that stuff. He blew that stuff up. And everything you see Jesus doing is constantly to teach people, teach his disciples, teach us, teach the people around him what real life is meant to be like. And so instead of boundaries and borders and all these things that divide us because of our differences, Jesus is actually embracing those things and calling us to do the same, because the thing that unites us is him. He's the one who brings us together. His love brings us together. His sacrifice brings us together. His calling us back to the Father brings us together. This is what makes us family. And this is why we aren't meant to be divided and all separated out. But we're meant to be one family with one God as our Father and pursuing him with our life. And so as we do this, we're focusing on him. It makes those moments when we don't stand out that much more, right? Like, when we've had moments where we're actually doing this, when we're all about God, we're all about Jesus, we have our focus in the right spot, we're zoomed all the way out, we're seeing him for who he is, we're seeing other people, we're loving them the way Jesus loved them, we're embracing people like brothers and sisters because we get it. We're no better than anyone else. We're all loved and we're all welcomed in. And because of Jesus, we can be restored. We can be renewed. We can be made new. We can be resurrected. And so these moments stand out even more when we aren't focused on those things and we focus on ourselves. And then when we all are doing this, and there's a lot of us doing it, it causes all of us to kind of ask the question, like, what are we doing? What am I doing? But then what are we doing? Because life is a group effort. It's not meant to be lived alone. Like, we're meant to be doing this together. So if you're sitting there asking the question, what am I doing? And I'm sitting here asking, what am I doing? And someone else is asking, what am I doing? Like, we should be able to see each other doing that and be able to encourage each other in that and say, no, what are we doing, man? Our focus is off, which is part of why we need to be together. We need to be walking through life together because we can help each other when we get into those ruts, when we get into those holes that we've dug ourselves into where we're just focused on us again. And we can help each other see beyond ourselves. So there's a little illustration that's going to pop up on the screen. And this problem that we keep having of focusing on us is like, it's like looking at a picture and just seeing one little part of it, and it doesn't always make sense, and it is kind of fuzzy, and it's confusing a lot of times, and it doesn't really help anything or anyone. And it's because our focus is so zeroed in on just us. Just us rarely makes any sense. Because like we've already established and said, we're not designed to just be just us. But us coming together, focusing on our Creator, our Father, as a family, as brothers and sisters, is the thing that helps us continue to zoom out. It's the thing that helps us continue to have the right perspective and the continuing to grow perspective, the thing that's going to help us to continue to see more and more of who God is. And so as this thing zooms out, what you thought was just this one little small confusing thing when it was just your life, as you keep backing up, you begin to see the bigger picture, and it's not about you. It is not just about your friend, or it's not just about your family, and it's not just about your school, and it's not just about your future, and it's not just about your future husband and wife and how many kids you'll have. It's not just about your issues, problems, successes, or any of that. At the end of the day, at the end of our life, in the middle of our life, all of our life is meant to be about Him. It's meant to be about Jesus. It's meant to be about the one who made us. It's meant to be about His love. It's meant to be about His sacrifice. It's meant to be about the fact that He is the one who unites us and brings us together. It's meant to be about Him helping us realize that He is the one. He is I am. And we are not. He is perfect and all-knowing and amazing. And we are not. He is incredible and never, ever ending on His grace and completely knowing how many times you and I are going to mess up and always accepting and forgiving of us. And we are not. And so when we focus on Jesus and we make Him the point and we make Him who we're living for, then we start to see things differently and we see through the lens of the gospel. We see things through the lens of love and grace, and we see each other as brothers and sisters, and some of them as well that just don't even know it yet. And we see His kingdom. And we can see all of this stuff because we see Him. And so tonight, I mean, the encouragement, the challenge, the thing that we see in front of all of us is this invitation to make Him the point of our lives, individually but collectively, that we could all pursue our Father together, that we could all live like brothers and sisters, and be connected together, encouraging one another, praying for one another, helping each other when we go through the hard stuff that happens in life. Reminding each other of what reality is and what's really true. The hope and the love and the grace that's found in knowing Jesus. And we all help each other in that. And we need each other to do that, to do it well and to do it the way God intended. And so it's gonna start with us just being honest with where we're at. Where are we focused right now? Who are we looking at? Who do we have the magnifying glass on right now in our life, honestly? Do we have Jesus as our focus? Do we have anyone else on our radar at all? Is our scope and our perspective backed out of just our life in any way? Or are we just totally zoned in on what's going on in our little circle?
For more information about Westridge Church and our young adult ministry, please go to westridge.com/YA.